You know, the endocrine system was not, there wasn't much known about that 30 or 40 years ago. And so they weren't quite sure what all these glands did. This particular paper was published in the mid-60s. And so I don't know how much they knew then about the functions of all the pituitary, I mean the endocrine glands. But I think it's without a doubt that as the chakras are opened and energized and developed and cleansed of impure energies, that these endocrine glands are functioning better. And as these endocrine glands function more in a more healthy way, a human being is maintained in greater health, especially when the pituitary and the pineal are energized with the kundalini energies. From then on, good health will be the norm after that.
If you have a stronger sense of looking at the chakra system, sense association over another, does that indicate anything, or is that just...
A sense association?
Like if your sense of smell is greater than any other sense you have, or... And that's in the first chakra, does that indicate anything, like you're stuck in the first chakra?
No, not really. No, no. In Kundalini Yoga, the development of those senses the development of the powers of the senses is part of the training. So in developing the powers of the first chakra, see, they're very explicitly focused on this kind of information. And so to really awaken and cleanse that, it would be developing the sense of smell at that level. Now, in one sense, it does make sense that the sense of smell would be a first chakra kind of experience, because first chakra, again, is the chakra that is concerned very much with the physical body, with issues of trust, and a low part of our animal nature. And as a mammal, the sense of smell was that's how most mammals get around, isn't it? It's with the sense of smell. And so, that's why it would be put there. What?
Look at two dogs trying to figure out how to
trust with. Yeah, right. The sense of smell. Yeah. But it's more of a, you might say, catechetical approach, the way they divide up the powers of the chakras sometimes seems pretty arbitrary. You know, in the second chakra we'll be developing this sense and this thing and so forth. But they'll really be focusing on the motive of that chakra, which is pleasure and emotional experience, and how that can be done in an unhealthy way and in a healthy way. And so let's learn a healthy way. Okay. Ready? All right, ready to go on.
Question I wanted to ask about your comment when you said when the pituitary and the pineal gland had been activated,
yes,
that good health was the norm.
Yes.
Well, can you clarify that? Now, you're not insinuating by that after this event that there are still no blockages that remain. In other words, you will experience headaches. You will not have a perfect body. I mean, your body will not always function in a perfect way. There will still be conditions that affect the physical body, such as headaches, what you were talking about. Are you saying too that once this has happened, that you will not be susceptible to major forms of illness like cancer or diabetes? Can you just clarify?
Well, I wasn't saying any of all of that. Okay. Why don't you let me get through this part here, and we'll see if that question is still there, okay, about how all this works. Because obviously, people die, gurus die, Buddha died, and so forth. And they died for a reason. And, okay, let me see where I am now. Okay, where am I? I am going to talk about the nature of Kundalini now, although I would certainly like to spend much more time talking about this whole developmental process in terms of the chakras and how we move from a body, feeling, ego. I think I will say one short thing about that. Go to your yellow sheet, if you would. And look at the left-hand side, the self-experience that we start off in life with, a body, feeling, ego. I am, and our identity is very much invested in the experience of the body. And this is a very young human being. This kind of ego level is very much attuned to the body and to the etheric energies. Okay? So the developing infant is very attuned to its physical energy experience and the experience of etheric energies. Very attuned to that. It communes with the world through the medium of matter and chi, or life energy, or pranic energy is what the Hindus would call it, the yogis. Now remember, we don't lose that level of development. We don't lose that level of self. We keep growing. So somewhere in all of our experience, there is still the potential to commune with the world in this way. The mythical emotional ego is attuned to the astral body and the lower mental body. It's attuned to the thought and feeling connection, to where thought and feeling come together. And it's kind of stuck there. It is not really quite capable of overriding feeling with thought. And so it communes largely with the culture through the medium of myth and desire. So you can see how many, many people are there. That's their level of development, is a mythical emotional. Who am I? I am a member of this group. And my energy, my experience of energy, is very much that kind of energy. So each of these ego identity levels are attuned more to certain energies. The energy to which the body ego is attuned is the energy of the body, and this chi energy. The energy to which the mythical emotional ego is attuned is emotional energy. The mental ego and its self-experience, as we've mentioned already, is an ego that is very much given a shape by self-concept. It's attuned to conceptual and paradigmatic reality. This is how it communes with people and things beyond itself. So this particular ego finds itself as one of, or part of, a larger conceptual reality or paradigm. It communes through paradigmatic convergences, you would say. Now, that might not sound too exciting, but I'm afraid it's very important, this whole idea of paradigms, because a people might be bonded together through the level of myth and desire and feeling, but we're also very much bonded together through paradigms. A paradigm is a whole way of seeing reality, and if you change the way you see reality, you change the kind of person that is doing the seeing. Paradigm is something that is also, it's not easy to see that you're in one, but you are. Every word we say in language carries some kind of paradigmatic implication. All thought and all language is infused with paradigmatic understandings. And one of the things that's happening in this day and age is several paradigms are clashing. And who knows how that will come out. The kind of energy to which the mental ego is attuned, then, is mental energy or mental life or thinking. And it's also attuned to the energy of the higher astral body or feeling. So when Jung is describing the functions of consciousness as thinking and feeling, intuition and sensation, he's talking about a consciousness that is largely mental egoic. It can think. Knows that energy, feel, sense, and intuit. Then finally, there's the higher ego, which is a kind of a non-ego. It's a sense of self. Call it a spiritual ego or a soul self. It is attuned to the higher, non-conceptual energies of the soul. And it communes with other people and creation at the level of being. Now, this is the experience that in the East is known as enlightenment or cosmic consciousness. I'm not merely one with all that is through the medium of matter and chi energy and myth and paradigm. Yeah, I'm connected all in all those levels, but I am a being, and you are a being, and we're all beings in the one being. It's a very profound level of unity that exists. I've given you a handout about that kind of self-experience. It's called Two Kinds of Self-Experience, okay? On the right-hand side, the self-experience of the enlightened spiritual soul self is contrasted with, on the left side, the experience of self we have in the mental ego. And so you can see, when I use the word mental ego, I don't mean the false self system. The false self system is not identical with the mental ego. The mental ego is a small self, not a false self. The false self is one aspect of the mental ego. The mental ego is defining myself in terms of my ideas of myself and walking around basically attached to my idea of myself and thinking about that basically 24 hours a day and not even knowing that we're doing that because that's normal. Okay? If you would like to entitle those two columns in a more classical, theological way, you could see the left-hand column is attuned to what St. Thomas would call essence, and the right-hand column to what he would call existence. Essence is what something is. Existence is that something is. To be awake in the spiritual soul self is to be awake first and foremost to the fact that I am, is to be awake to oneself as a direct experience. The self is not a reflected experience any longer. It is a direct experience of one's existence. So there's no idea of who I am that tells me who I am. I know who I am before I think of who I am. Before I think who I am, I am. And so there is this sense of I am that predominates. And in waking up at that level to the fact that I am, before I think I am or feel I am or anything else, there's the recognition that everything else is also just like that. Everything else simply is. Before it is anything, okay, if that makes sense. Before something is specifically this or that, it is. All right, so that's a kind of a cosmic connection with things that's very beautiful and is the goal of the Kundalini process, is to produce that. That's why I wanted to mention it at this point. You could go down that list of that I am and see how radically different it is from the what I am. I might call attention to a couple of things. As I already mentioned, that I am is the direct experience of oneself, but it's an undefined experience. As soon as I begin to ask, who am I? I'm on the left-hand side of the page. Okay? When I don't ask the question and simply accept my existence, I'm still there, but I'm on the right-hand side of the page. In the experience of God, the ego experiences Christ as an other, a thou. In this true self, we experience Christ as really the ground of our existence. And so forth. We could mention one more thing, that in the mental ego and all other egos, judgment, evaluation, and interpretation go on and on and on 24 hours a day. Everything that comes into consciousness is compared to everything else in consciousness. The computer goes on working and working and working, and that is what it means to be judging and evaluating. So that mental or inner silence comes with great difficulty. The mind is always talking to itself about everything. And sitting right in the middle is the ego. It is always the reference point for all this inner noise. On the right-hand side, there is no more noise of this kind, none whatsoever. The mind is perfectly silent. There's no evaluation, no judgment, no interpretation. And yet, life goes on. Maybe we didn't need to do all that. Okay? Let's keep all that in mind, because we'll be coming back to it. You might just check within yourself now as you look over those two columns and say, how does that right-hand column look to you? Does that look attractive? Do you know that experience? Does it seem strange? Just note that. And so we've said that each of these ego levels are attuned to a certain kind of an energy within. They're different kinds of consciousness. Remember, consciousness is intention plus the contents plus energy, right? So let's take a look at our old friend, the mental ego. And the mental ego is a normal state of consciousness. I can't erase that, can I? No. I can do that, though. So the mental ego has attention, it has an intention, it has all kinds of contents. We're going to focus on the mental ego because I assume everyone in here is has grown to that place. I'm sure you have. And it has an energy. Okay. The contents, again, are thought, feeling, memories, and all of it is given form and shape by self-image. The intention of the mental ego may be selfish, to perpetuate this particular version of ourselves, this self-image, or it may be loving. If it's inclined towards selfishness and fearfulness and playing games, we would speak of the mental ego as being contaminated by that false self system. Okay? The energy to which the mental ego is attuned would be the energies of the mental body, the astral, and the lower frequencies of the spiritual. it's pushing against that. It's bounded on one side by the astral frequencies and on the other by a higher spiritual. And the intention, of course, is enfolded into all, attention is enfolded into all of this. This attention is peeking out through the world through this lens or filter. And then sitting underneath all of this, well, is the unconscious. And here, the world. Now, the mental ego is right between those kinds of realities, all right? Well, this is where most people find themselves. And these are the people to whom we are addressing the gospel. And we are speaking first and foremost to the intention out of which they live. And we're trying to invite them to be less selfish and more loving. And that's as it should be. We're trying to change the contents of their consciousness so that the thoughts they're holding on to are more directed toward the gospel, so that the feelings they have are more positive, so that their self-image is not as negative, and their experience of energy will be more pleasant. And that is all as it should be. That is exactly how it has to go. At this stage, our primary form of prayer would be more discursive. Prayer that is speech. Prayer that receives God's word through the medium of speech, a written word. We're praying with our mind, in other words. There comes a point in the spiritual journey when things begin to move beyond that. And so that's what I want to get into now. Kundalini energy is not this energy. It's not the energy of the mental body, nor the astral, nor the etheric, nor the physical. It is the energy of the higher level, of the spiritual or causal level of the soul. Okay? So that's the first contrast. Yes. All right, I'll come to that, right. Yeah. Because that spiritual level is really already there in all the, well, you remember the acorn and the oak tree, okay? It's already there as a potential in the body. And so the spiritual dimension of the soul is already there in all our development. It's not that the soul is, it's not that this spiritual level is hanging out in heaven somewhere and waiting to come on to us when the mental is developed. No, it's already there, but it can't be realized until the mental is developed to a certain extent. So its energy is already there, even in the body itself. But it's latent or dormant in the body and becomes active in the body when we begin to wake up at that spiritual level, right? Okay. So there begins to come a time in the spiritual journey when the mental ego is no longer our normal mode of operating, modus operandi. The contents of consciousness change, the attachment to self-image changes, the intention out of which we're working is more inclined toward a loving kind of intentionality than a selfish intentionality. And so, as has happened all along, the mental begins to open up and give way to something else. And when that happens, the kind of energy we experience will also change as well. Now, this is probably the most difficult part of the spiritual growth process, because this is such a new and different kind of an experience of energy. The awakening of that next level, that spiritual level or soul self, is so unlike any other self experience we've had that we don't have any point of reference with which to compare it. The whole spiritual journey thus far, from the body ego to the mental ego has been an ego project. We've been working out of some kind of an idea of ourself, even if it was an idea of ourself that was tied to a group, or that we were defining it ourselves. And now this kind of self-experience wants to emerge that doesn't care a whit about any of that. It doesn't seem to be anchored at all in any kind of self-image, and doesn't seem to be anchored in the opinions of any groups. It's just there. And so it's very incredibly strange on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's very, very familiar. It's like, this is who you have been all along, but you just didn't know it or realize it. Or this is who we have been all along. This is the one who has been looking out of these eyes all along. And how nice to finally discover that here I am. And so it's an entry into a whole world insofar as the experience of attention is concerned, and the contents of consciousness, and the energy as well. Now, I think the original plan was for this Kundalini energy, the energy of this higher spiritual part of our being, to in some way be flowing through the whole person all along, and just becoming, you might say, a little more intensified when we move from the mental to the spiritual. Okay? So let's say we would have a perfect world where there was no sin and no problems. What would human beings be like? Well, it's almost impossible to say, right? But I imagine that we would still be born in the usual way, and would have to go through a learning process and a growing process. But we would be doing that in the context of a loving environment that would not be dishing out emotional pain, fear and shame and guilt and all of that, rejection. That would not be there. You could still make mistakes in that environment. You could perhaps even mistakenly hurt another, but that would be patched up rather quickly. What would our energy experience be in such a world? Well, we can't even imagine, right, what that would be. But I would like to guess that something of this higher energy, this energy of the spiritual soul, would have been infusing and directing our bodies, our emotional energies. It would be a liberated energy that would be very familiar to us, along with all of our other energies. That's a fantasy. That's not how it is. What usually happens in our development, as we say, is there are woundings that happen, especially on an emotional level and a spiritual level, so that the energies of those levels are contaminated with fear and shame and guilt and hurts and, well, all kinds of stuff. This darkness within doesn't allow those higher energies, the energies of that higher self or spiritual self or causal self, to be really informing what's happening on the lower. And so that contributes greatly to a sense of self-confusion and alienation. It's kind of like really stuck. Another way of showing this, using a little more Jungian model, would be like this. This is the approach that the book takes. So here you would see the mental ego. Let's just look at that left-hand side, your upper left-hand side. There's the mental ego and its relation to the unconscious. And okay, so that's the mental ego and its relation to the unconscious the unconscious, including the energies of that have been repressed and those that have not yet been realized. And in this unconscious, there are all kinds of pains. There's all kinds of blockages. It's part of the reason the mental ego doesn't want to have too much to do with the unconscious, wants to keep a distance from it. There's fear there and so forth. Deeper in the unconscious is this level we call the dynamic ground. And this dynamic ground would correspond to what in the other sheet we were calling that soul self or spiritual self, where God and the soul come together, where God is giving existence to the soul. The energy of that dynamic ground is Kundalini. That's where that energy comes from. It comes from that place within us where God is giving us life and existence. And this life and existence is then becoming manifest in the physical plane, the etheric plane, the astral, the mental, and the spiritual. And yet there's been woundings in these other levels. And so that energy is not capable of really reaching the mental ego. Now, in another world, a more perfect world, we'd say the mental ego wouldn't be as separated from the unconscious, and the energy from that dynamic ground would be informing and infusing all of our other energies. Okay? But it's not. It's kind of stuck down there. We seem to be isolated and alienated from the root of our own existence and kind of a mystery to ourselves as well. We're more inclined to try to solve the identity project by continuing to dabble with self-image and self-concept and refine that and hone it and update it and all of that kind of stuff, which never gets us anywhere, but that's the work that has to be done at that level. So that's what's happened, is our human powers have been contaminated by the woundings in the emotional level and the negativity we carry in the mental level. The consequences to our human powers of carrying this wounding is we don't realize our true spiritual identity. In a perfect world, you might say, again, this ego would develop ever awake to the energy of the ground and the God beyond. Ever awake to that. Can you imagine what that kind of development would be? To know from the beginning and all through your life your oneness with God, and to have that kind of energy infused into your emotional development and your mental development. So you wouldn't see this split between the ego and the unconscious. You'd see them working together. Another consequence of this then has been mental confusion, judgmentalism. Cut off from the root of our true identity, we spend a lot of time acting like gods, using our powers of reason to dominate and control others. We think the solution to this problem is to find something outside of ourselves that we can bring to ourselves to make us whole. And that's ultimately what addiction is looking for something outside of myself to fill up these splits within myself. The astral level is filled with fear and shame and resentment and guilt, which spread to the mental and other levels. The etheric level the flow of energy is blocked. The energy nadis are blocked. The organ systems and tissues, which are supposed to be nourished by that, are starved. As a result of the loss of what you might call a natural contact with God, then, in which the energies of the dynamic ground would be infused into the rest, because that kind of natural contact has been lost, we have also lost immortality. So it's quite conceivable that, again, in a perfect world where our development took place with the energy of the dynamic ground infusing all of our other energies, that the physical body would always get just what it needed, and the tissues would be repaired when they were damaged, and the physical body would not die. Scientists, in fact, don't know why the physical body dies. There's nothing, it would seem, in our genetic intelligence that is a death gene. There's no gene for death that says you will die after so many years. They're not quite sure why people die. Well, one thing's for sure, we know we die when an organ system fails to function as it should. And we know that organ systems don't function as they should when they don't get what they need. And if one of the things an organ system needs is lots of good chi energy, bathing it constantly, and it's not getting that, instead it's getting mega doses of negative emotional energy, you can be sure that organ system won't function as it should. So there are many consequences that we have all experienced because of the woundings of early childhood, and even in the womb, there's woundings. And the consequences in all the different levels of our experience are very great. And so, yes, when we speak of Kundalini as the energy of the spiritual level of our being, you could speak of it as the energy of the dynamic ground, which is supposed to be there all along, infusing and directing our development. It's supposed to be doing that in response to the promptings of the divine. But it's blocked. Our experience of it is very minimal, and the blockages in all the other levels prevent us from having this experience of this energy and the consciousness which it produces. So there we are in the mental ego, going along in the spiritual journey, and there comes a time when the mental ego begins to disintegrate, and here's this other experience of energy, and it seems quite unusual and quite rare, and the only reason it does is because we have all along been so alienated from the root of our existence. And now we're used to an energy that's going around here, and we're experiencing an energy that comes from here, very deep, and it feels like something totally different. Okay? Any questions or comments about that? Okay, I'm going to just start to move on. The question then for religion is how to heal this split. The word religion means to relink. Religio. To relink. We're trying to relink the experience of the person to their ground. How does that happen? How do we relink with our true source of being? I'm going to get into that, look at the Eastern approach, or some Eastern approaches to doing that, and I'm going to compare that with the Christian plan after a break. I'm going to go ahead and stop now and see if you have any questions about this particular segment, which is getting to be a little more difficult to talk about, is how each of the different levels, we said, are attuned to different kinds of energies. We get up to the mental ego, we're attuned to the energies of thinking and feeling still, and sensation and intuition. Beyond the mental ego is a different kind of energy that we come upon, and that's the energy we call Kundalini. Okay? Oh, yes, now.
When you have one of those blocks, what is the basic stimulus that gets you to break out of it?
You mean talking about healing? Yeah, right.
What brings us about is this, and how do you know whether it's a genuine thing or whether, you know, it's whether it's an evil thing?
How do you know whether a block is a genuine thing?
In your approach in trying to get out of it, how do you assess
Well, there's all kinds of blocks. You know, there's blocks that are mental level kinds of obstacles. You might say the most common one of those would be narrow-mindedness or attachment to a certain belief paradigm would be another. The solution to that is obviously more open-mindedness or to expanding your paradigm at least to where it's open to transcendence, to growth. Attachment is usually the word that is used to define the kind of blocking that is most problematic in spiritual growth. Okay, attachment to especially myself and where I am. Attachment to a certain kind of identity that I've begun to think I am. Attachment to certain emotional experiences. Attachment to not having certain emotional experiences. The attachment is usually the problem, and that's really the essence of the false self. It's an attaching thing. So unblocking is usually talked about in terms of spiritual growth as detachment, detaching from emotional experiences of certain kinds, of detaching from the idea that I really know who I am. I don't know, that's the best I can do with that answer, because obviously some of the blocks need to be addressed in counseling, and some of them, the blocks come from poor diet and poor exercise. I mean, there's just all different kinds of blocks we can have. Yes.
Are you referring using the word blocks? Is it something that can be corrected by body massage, acupressure, acupuncture? Physically unblock the blocks?
Blocks that are in that etheric body can sometimes be helped by acupressure, massage, yoga, and other kinds of exercises that move the energy along. Okay, but if the block is there in the first place because of constrictions and woundings in the emotional level, then those will need to eventually be healed as well. Okay, the memory at least will need to be healed of that. Blocks that come from the mental level will need to be healed on that level. You cannot heal a negative attitude with a massage. You know, you need to change the negative attitude, or else the negative attitude will result in making a constriction on your emotions and a constriction on your basic life energy flow. And you'll need a massage every day just to keep up with that negative attitude. Okay? That makes sense? Okay, good. Yeah. Usually for most of us, the problem, you know, we have consequences on all kinds of levels, but where the really hard work has to be done is on the mental level. I mean, even those who do inner child work and go back into the past and remember all this stuff and relive it and strive for some kind of forgiveness need to change their attitude on the mental level, need to get off their own back with self-judgment, need to let go of negative self-ideas so they can not keep repeating that experience or producing it again and again and again. Okay. Once we do enough of that work and begin to get rid of some of that pain, then we begin to taste or sense this other energy that you could say is coming from deeper, using that model, or using the other model I gave you on that yellow sheet of paper, the energy of that more spiritual or soul self level will begin to present itself. Remember, when you have done your work on a lower level, you will move into the higher spontaneously of your own accord.